Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, that puts you in queue to talk to Michael. We welcome you to the show. We'd love to hear your comments and your questions. This has been a fast week. Monday, we're going to have Ari with us again. He is our chef from Heartland, and he's going to be online to answer any food questions. So we're going to be doing 10 days of food fun and forgiveness with him at Heartland when we first get there. And the schedule here in Florida is wrapping up. We have a workshop tonight, and then we have an all-day Mind Shifters and Stillpoint Breathing tomorrow in Lake Worth. And then we head up to High Springs. So it's been a busy schedule. It's been a good schedule, and it's been awesome to be here in Florida. So now let's welcome Michael to the show.
Welcome, everybody. We're delighted that you're here, delighted that I'm here, and that we get the opportunity to support you in this awesome process of learning the ancient Aramaic tool of forgiveness and all the corollary knowledge that comes with it. So we're just delighted to be here and to support you, and we're delighted that you're part of the team that's changing the world. When we mention Memorial Day, as we do every day, our invitation is the same. We invite you to become one who puts an end to war on planet Earth. How are we going to put an end to planet war on Earth? I had a conversation with a gentleman this morning, and he's all into the history and how this one did that one and that one did that one, and all we have to do is get rid of them. And that if we just know about what they're doing and we can get weapons big enough to kill them off, then everything will be okay. And of course, the mind that's in that belief system just can't imagine another possibility, but totally forgets that this killing off of people has been happening for thousands of years and it's never worked. So we're taking a different approach. We're going to invite you to live a human life. We're going to invite you, every time you're in any form of hostility or fear, to be one who says, ah, my mind is outputting hostility or fear. I think I need to change it. I think I need some forgiveness work. So forgiveness, in the context that we're speaking of, in any context, pardon my, I don't need to qualify by that, in any context, forgiveness has nothing to do with the Greek idea that we've all been taught of we let other people off the hook for what's happening inside of us. Forgiveness is the tool with which you go inside yourself and change what's happening inside of you. So we're here to support you in learning forgiveness, in passing it along, in teaching forgiveness. And if you haven't touched into the core of that work yet, there is a worksheet on our website. If you go to www.whyagain.com, on the right-hand side, there's a link that says Download Worksheets. And under that link, there are dozens of links, but the first 7 give you the whole story of how to forgive, the whole how-to process. And so we invite you to jump in on the website, download the worksheet, download Chapter 24 from my book, or you're welcome to download the whole book free, and start putting the pen to the paper. If you have no idea how that's done, then the next, after those first 2 links, the chapter 24 and the worksheet, the next 5 links are all radio shows where we've walked somebody through. So you have a custom set of instructions for how to do the forgiveness process. And as you're listening to that custom set of instructions and doing the worksheet process, if you have a challenge, if there's something that doesn't make sense to you, that's why we're here. 646-200-4169 is our calling number, or you can go into the chat room through our website and ask a question, and we'll be glad to help you to refine. And we appreciate your questions because you help us to refine our understanding. Pardon me, I've got the hiccups. Our understanding of forgiveness. So, Jeannie, do we have anything? Any questions in the chat room? Anything happening? Dr. Tim's here. Welcome, sir. How do you be?
I be with my mute button on, but other than that, I'm good. Thank
well, that's
you.
Cool.
Well, glad
fabulous.
To be here.
Anything exciting on your mind today?
Not right off the top of my head. I had another powerful session of releasing things for people. A couple of them last night, and another one today, and just really enjoying being able to spread the use of these tools and watch the benefits that that come from it. I had a gentleman who had been going to the counselor at his college since October, and I asked, so what are you doing in that therapy? What's a typical session like? And the typical session was the stereotypical, how was your week? What rough spots did you have? Let's think about how you might do that differently. Okay, we'll see you next week. And I said, well, has that helped you? And he said, no, not really, but I need to do that if they're gonna keep giving me the medication I need for my depression. So it was just a delight to be able to offer a whole different approach and a whole different set of tools, and to see the blown away look on his face at the end of one session with me, having a whole different perspective on what might occur if he applies these tools to his thought process and how they produce emotions within him. So it's delightful to be on this team, and that's my thought for today.
It certainly is amazing. I know every time I watch it work, it opens another level of delight and understanding for me. We have a woman at the support group we did in Fort Lauderdale last night. We did Boca the night before, but she shared with the group that over the period of when she was a child, she had a problem with crossed eyes, and over the period of the last 12 years, her vision was showing double vision and her eyes were misaligned. And when she was a kid, she'd done some exercises and that kind of helped to deal with the misalignment of the eyes. But then about 12 years ago, it started to exacerbate, and it came to the point where, everything she saw was double. And they went in and they did their tests and they told her, well, this is what's wrong with your optic nerve. And, that's just the way it is. So last night in the support group, she shared how when she came to the 9-day intensive up in Palm Coast, that was one of the things she went to work on with her worksheets and such. And she came out of the breathing session with single vision and a change. And she shared that on Monday she was at the ophthalmologist and said, well, can you see any difference? And the guy said, yeah, there's a difference physically in this. So, of course, we know it's not physically because there's no physical. We know that we are energetic beings, not physical beings. And it's a tough thing to break through, this belief in physical. But somebody's got to do it, so here we are doing it. But it was just awesome to hear this young lady who's sharing how now she's not dealing with double vision. She's got single vision, and her ophthalmologist verifies that her optic nerve has changed. Can't imagine how that could happen. Well, we can imagine. It's called still point breathing. It is an awesome, powerful tool. That's actually a workshop that we're going to do tomorrow here in Lake Worth. Tonight we're doing Why Is This Happening to Me Again up in Lake Worth at the Quaker Center. And tomorrow we'll do Why Is This Happening to Me Again. And you're right, it's just amazing, delightful, empowering, and, of course, I love Richard Bach's saying, we teach best that which we most need to learn. And so as we facilitate it, you and I get to learn it on deeper and deeper levels, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was like, you know, what you were saying yesterday about, do I see examples of people resisting or procrastinating with the people I work with? And my answer is, I don't have to look outside myself. I see enough resistance and procrastinating in myself to know that it's there. And once I fight through it, you know, I would think after a while I would just learn and it would melt away completely, because every time I've ended up resisting something, it's gotten worse and worse, and then I do the work and it falls away and I feel so much better. And I think, why didn't I do this earlier? I'm still looking for that answer.
Good breath, but yep. When you recognize that the operating system that selects your decisions and behavior on automatic pilot has been in development for 1,000 generations, it's on automatic pilot, and its major attribute is inertia. If you remember the definition of inertia from physics class in high school, a body moving in a particular direction at a particular rate of speed will tend to continue to move in that direction at that rate of speed until it's acted upon by an outside force. And, of course, that same law applies to the functioning of what we call the mind. If we have 1,000 generations of insane behavior in there and we don't know how to do our work, then once something triggers it into activity, it's inertia bound, it's going to play out whatever's in there. And when I recognize that, then as I do my work, I become the outside force that changes its direction. And because we literally have this operating system that goes back 1,000 generations, when the stress is up and the chips are down, that in particular triggers the dumbest programmer in our whole genetic history, the behavior of the most outrageous, insane, rageful, grief-filled, pain-filled person in our structure, because that's the highest amplitude of energy stored in the structure. And when an environmental event happens that brings that into activity, you know, there's a cell biologist, Bruce Lipton, who's doing some awesome work in showing that every thought we think becomes a neuropeptide, and the neuropeptide activates the genetics. So if I think a thought of, boy, that person is really off the wall in whatever way, and I've got great, 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 great grandpa that had one of those people in his life over whom he was totally enraged and blindly insane, murderous with, what's going to come up out of my carbon-based memory? It's going to be murderous rage. Just because it's there. And rather than having to function out of that, when I have the awareness that I'm not my murderous rage or my grief or my pain, that's something that's in my structure from all these generations. You know, when they said in the ancient scriptures that the sins of the fathers will be passed, yea, into 3 and 4 generations, that was not some kind of condemnation from God. They were just telling you how your genetics works. And so until you or I go in and address great, 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 great grandfather's rage and forgive it, every time I'm in that environment, that's what my carbon-based memory is going to counsel me to do. And if it comes up with enough impetus, then it knocks me unconscious and my power of choice is gone. And here we go again, right down the same old pike. And so the forgiveness process is really about literally de-energizing those energetic patterns that have been reinforced over the generations, reinforced over the generations and reinforced in our lives. And as you change them, once you delete that one, as you and I have talked about before, you enter into a situation where normally that crazy part would come up and all of a sudden you're looking around like, gee, where is it? Where's my crazy part? Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgave that. I removed that. I didn't forgive the person in front of me who triggered my great-great-great-great-grandfather's rage and murderous thoughts. I forgave my grandfather, great-great-great-great-grandfather's rage and murderous thoughts. And now that that's freed out of my genetic structure, I'll no longer pass it on to my children and they on to their children. And I'll open the energetic window, not only for everybody in my family bloodline to heal that kind of murderous rage, but also to open the space for anyone on the planet who has murderous rage to go, oh, I don't have to get lost in this. I can wake up and heal. So that's the that would be my understanding of how it works and why we tend, even when we know better, to go back to the same old pattern. And, you know, when they ask Yeshua, well, okay, so we have to forgive it. If I forgive it 7 times, is that enough? And he says, no. He says 77 times 70, which literally means not a literal 77 times 70, but an infinite number times till I'm complete with that dynamic inside myself.
Well, that makes sense. And so I have a few more worksheets to do, but it's
welcome.
Very, very nice to have the tool.
Absolutely. And Jeannie, tell us if we've got a caller. So. 954, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hello, this is Lois. Is this who you...
Well, hey there, young lady. How are you?
I'm just fine. I'm just getting used to the little bit of delay in our conversation. I'm great, and I heard you talking about me with... in your conversation with Dr. Tim a moment ago. And
yeah.
So I just wanted to let you know that, and the listeners know it's all true. And the other insights that I'm aware of that I want to elaborate on, Michael, is that what I was really working on at the workshop was fear. And as I was chipping away at fear, I think... at least that's my take in a linear kind of a mind, that's what allowed the healing to take place. And I don't know if you have a comment about that, because I'm just recognizing how the generational fear is just so huge. And I it's probably even terror, and I'm glad that I don't even feel or identify terror, but the word terror comes up because I don't think I could handle terror, so I'm just chipping away at fear.
Well, my input would be that, of course, we now know that the mind functions through every cell in the body.
Mm-hmm.
So the optic nerve is part of your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I store fear in my optic nerve, you know, you look at the person who sees something fearful approaching them and all their muscles tense up. If the place where my fear is stored is the optic nerve, then obviously when it's resonated, boom, that thing's going to contract and it's going to create this so-called double vision. And they're going to say, well, you see, there's a physical problem. The muscle's too short.
Yeah.
And
I distinctly remember as a child just looking at my family and just going, this is not love. We talk love. It's supposed to be this way. It's supposed to be that way. But I'm not seeing this. I'm not feeling it, not just towards me, but just as I observed my elders towards each other. So it makes sense what you're saying.
Jeannie has a comment for you.
Yes.
Notice your words were, I'm not seeing it.
Yes. Thank you, Jeannie.
And that's how the tissue, you know, Yeshua says the power of life and death. Life and death is in our words, the power of seeing and not seeing. I worked with a fellow out in Texas about 25 years ago, and this fellow was in his 70s, and he wore double hearing aids and still had trouble hearing. And in a session, we got in touch with, or he got in touch with, being about 9 years of age, and he was a little bit overweight, and his friends started to call him Piggy. And he didn't want to hear it. And he turned his hearing off. He literally turned his hearing off and started to wear hearing aids at 9 years of age. Here he is in his 70s, and he's sitting in the classroom. It was actually a still point breathing workshop. He's sitting in the classroom, and he's looking very startled, looking around the room like, you know, what's going on here? It's like, gee, what's happening? He said, why is everybody shouting? Everybody wasn't shouting. He turned his hearing back on.
He gave
his mind permission to hear.
Well, you know, from my experience, there's no doubt in my mind, because that's what happened to me, just different, as you're saying it, just different sense.
Exactly. And so when you really start to look at it, you know, it's time for us to come into the modern age. There's a book written by a fellow who is a double Princeton PhD, and it's called The Nature of Scientific Revolution. I'm not recalling his name at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
But he says, old scientific ideas die away and new ideas are adopted when the old scientists physically die.
Okay.
And so let's listen to Einstein. Einstein says, on such things as matter, we've been all wrong. What we've heretofore called matter is energy, energy whose vibrations have been so low as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. That's science. Max Planck, as you've heard me quote him, says, as a man who spent his, here's a guy who's receiving the Nobel Prize in physics and says, as a man who spent his entire life studying matter, I can tell you this much, there is no matter as such. Our entire world is made of succeedingly smaller patterns of vibratory fields nested one within another within another. When you nest a vibratory field of, you know, I don't want to hear this into an ear, then you change the function of the ear. When you say, when you nest the frequency of I don't want to see this, it nests into the optic nerve. And we need to be careful of the power of our words because they are literal frequencies that change structure.
Yes, yes, obvious. It is so obvious. It is so obvious. You know, and in my
And yet, most of the world, most of the world is still looking at, well, we have this physical optic nerve and it has a problem, or we have this physical, you know, eardrum and it has a problem. As opposed to, let's move into the scientific age. We know matter doesn't exist. Why are we still trying to treat material diseases when matter doesn't exist? When matter, what we call matter, is nothing but an image in a mind. Our eye sees it matter as though it were physical and real, but we know scientifically that it's a series of vibratory fields, that it's not material. And when you start to look through the eyes of energy and you realize that it's not material substance but is energetic substance, then the frequencies that don't belong, all you need to do is forgive them and the tissue goes back to a total healthy state.
Yes. It makes sense to me.
There's another really powerful example of that. And No, you weren't at that workshop, but back in January we did a workshop, and Michael Coughlin's been on the show several times, and he's former military, and
had a lot of damage.
So he had a lot of damage to his shoulder, and the week before the Still Point Breathing workshop we did in Fort Lauderdale, Michael had had a major shoulder surgery, and he had like maybe 3 or 4 inches of movement possible in his arm after that surgery. And in his still point session, he had a full-blown, what the world calls a kundalini experience in his shoulder, a full-blown movement of energy in his shoulder, and a very intense, and he got up from that still point session able to raise his arm over his head. When he went to see the doctor the next week, the doctor said, I was in that shoulder. You can't do that. And he's standing there going, well, gee, doc, I'm doing it. Let's take a look at what's really going on. But the average, you know, so-called scientific mind says, no, no, I've been trained. This is a material problem, so we're going to fix the material, rather than I understand this is an energetic problem, so we're going to learn the tools to deal with the energetic aspect of it. And so it's a big shift, a big change that has to happen.
It's a huge shift that has to happen. When I was talking to my ophthalmologist, mindful of how much time I was actually allotted, I did, though, get in that he was treating disease, and I appreciated that, and I was focused on wellness.
Right.
And he said, well, then keep it up.
Well, it's nice that you got that kind of support, because I've had people come back to me whose doctors have fired them, have thrown them out of their offices and fired them because they won't stay with the disease model.
Yeah.
I've seen it happen many times. And and I certainly appreciate, you know, the way that Dr. Tim, as a psychotherapist, shares the tools with his clients now. And
as
how
do
you're
I.
doing
as
the same
do
with
I.
the psychotherapist, that you're handing them off to people and empowering them and supporting them.
Yes,
it's cool.
You know, I have been focused on treating wellness in my clients for a couple of decades, and your tools since I have been reintroduced to them and have been utilizing them myself, and then brought them into my practice is transforming my work and. The work that my clients are receiving, there's there is a time, you know, some time lag because we're all building brain cells.
That's it.
Of understanding. But they keep coming back. So they're getting, you know, if they're not getting instant results, which I'm not guaranteeing that they will, but that they're coming back and because they're getting something and they're making progress. And I'm so delighted.
Right.
I'm in your gratitude.
Delighted.
I really feel like I'm healing. I'm really part of a force that's healing the planet, which is why I went into the field that I went into in the first place. That was trying to understand my crazy family.
Fabulous. Well, that's very cool, and we appreciate you doing that. And you bring up a really good point, that of building the brain cells, and it's one that comes up, you know, perennially, because a lot of people start with this, and, you know, they were like, well, I've got 5 minutes and $5. Mm-hmm. Tell me everything you know, and I want it all to be fixed yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people won't hang around long enough to build the brain cells to understand differently than what the world has taught them. And those who won't, don't have access to these tools. They just won't be able to use them.
Yeah.
So it does take. And so if you're new to the show, I'm just reinforcing this, that hang around long enough to understand something that the world is the opposite of what the world has taught you. The world has taught you that every disease you have is physical.
Yeah.
Excuse me. There's no physical. How can you have a physical disease? You have an energetic disease, and the energetic disease is made up of energies that you've put in your structure that don't belong. And the signal that we're in a dis-ease state in any particular environment is that we have some form of hostility or fear firing in us. And that's where, when I build the brain cells and I go into some form of hostility or fear, I stop, I take a breath and realize I need to forgive this hostility or fear. I need to remove this hostility or fear from myself in order to alleviate my tissue structure of its disease process and to move into the true state of a human life and human beingness. So it takes a little time to gather that. You know, Yeshua said it this way. He said, you've got to have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. I think we can fairly safely assume that most everybody in his audience had what we call physical eyes and ears.
Yes.
But he was saying you have to have the brain cells or it's not going to be usable for you.
No, see, I'm going to joke now, but I'm going to say, no, I think you're getting better at explaining it, because I heard last night's presentation in a way I never heard before, and I think it was because you got better at it. But truthfully, my brain cells are building.
Yes, that's it. That's what it takes. And
it was
every
so clear
layer
last,
and every level.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, people will say to me, geez, Michael, you know, I've heard that you've taught that Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop as many as 3 times in a single day. Doesn't it get old and boring? It's like, absolutely not. Every time I teach it, it's fresh. It's new. It's a brand new experience for me because since the last time I taught it, I built some new brain cells, and now there's a whole new subtlety, a whole new understanding of it. And I've been doing that for well over a quarter of a century now, so you've got lots to look forward to.
Thank you so much, and I'll see you tonight. I'll get off the phone. I don't want to hog up the show. Let some other people have the privilege of having a dialogue with you. Thank you.
Okay, Lois. Blessings. We'll see you tonight. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. I love it. We've got a caller.
352.
Area code 352. Where are you calling from, and who have we got?
Hi, Michael. It's Joan at Heartland. How are you today?
Oh, I am blessed and highly favored. How about you, young lady?
Well, so am I, but I have a few issues in my tissues I'd like you to address.
I'd be happy to support you in it. How can I do that?
Well, thank you again for yesterday elaborating, and I'm looking for more elaboration. When you were explaining earlier to the caller about 1,000 generations of issues in the tissues, back to the whatever number, great, grand, whatever, when you're doing the worksheet on that kind of thing, when you start out with 1A and B, are you putting the emotion, murderous rage, or are you, what would that look like? I mean, I know you could put the name if you knew the name, or you could put maybe ancestry, or would you just put what it is? I know you can work on a person and feeling, but would it be either or both? how does that look?
Each one will produce a different healing result. So if I'm walking down the street, let's say I see somebody across the road beating on a child, and I go into this murderous rage, and I say, now this is my righteous rage and my righteous indignation, and that person over there deserved the punch in the nose that I gave them. Well, notice that, you know, the person who was beating on a child just got beaten on, and here I am doing the same thing and adding more energy to the dynamic of giving people beatings. So in that particular situation, I could do a worksheet on the person who's doing the beating, and that would take me into a particular part of the root of my rage and empower me to forgive that rage. Then I could do a worksheet on myself and my own abusive thoughts. That would take me into a different part of my rage and empower me to heal a different part of it. And this would be the 77 times 70 worksheets that Yeshua talks about. I could do a worksheet on the child who's suffering and being hurt as a result of that beating, and I'll clean up a different part of my rageful mind. Now, once I've healed my rageful mind, when I walk across the street as the presence of love, I know exactly what to speak to the person who's doing the beating, because they have been beaten and they're just playing out an unconscious energy dynamic, just like I did when I walked across the street to beat on them. And as I'm listening out of my being, I'm going to be empowered to create a space of support for the person who's doing the beating to heal. And for the child who maybe comes from 1,000 generations of children who've been beaten, for the child to go into their genetic structure and to heal the part of them that draws the abuser. So now, all the way around, we have healing happening. If I walk in there in my rage and beat and abuse, okay, so I saved this child. I say, see, it was worth it. I saved this child from getting a beating. Aren't I wonderful? Excuse me, no, you're not so wonderful, because by intensifying the energy of child abuse, you just created a frequency that's going to inspire 1,000 more abusers to turn and beat a child. When I become a healer, it's a different game. And Jeannie has a thought for us.
It was just my reality of what I was hearing. Were you asking what if you felt the rage but you didn't know what was triggering it, how to do a worksheet on it, or...
I was asking for examples, and I really appreciate what Michael has said, but I'm always open to more clarity, as many worksheets as one could or would do about a specific thing. So my question was about working from the perspective of the emotion itself, or working from, and one of the things he mentioned was this whole incident in his scenario was triggered by an observation of an abuse
right.
taking place. But what it could be a situation where an abuse is not taking place, you just simply feel the rage or the whatever
right.
it is that you... So in that case, and you know that potentially and even probably there has been in your lineage somebody who has perpetuated, you know, egregious kinds of behavior and et cetera. Yes. So in that case,
right. and
if you have observed someone, then... What is the, in addition to the emotion, what other kind of worksheets would you be doing? You gave about four examples a while ago, Michael, from an observation. So what if it's independent of that observation? What are some other examples?
In that case, and I'll hand the phone back to Michael, but the trigger could be two things. One, it could be you, and what's going on is I feel enraged and don't know why. And, you know, how does that make you feel? It might be, you know, out of control or confused or, you know, something like that. So actually yourself as the object of attention and feeling rage as the description of, you know, what's going on. And then you could also do a worksheet with rage being the object of attention and then go through, you know, what it brings up in you, what are you feeling when you think about rage, or when you, you know, whether it's within yourself or within another person. And, you know, there it could be fear that comes up as the feeling.
Thank you, Jeannie. I wasn't, the question is just to be answered, and Michael was talking. I appreciate your response. Thank you so much. And I have one more question for either of you.
Well, before we go into another question, let me just give a real-life example of what it is you're talking about, and I'm talking now from my own life. You know, in my life, I've always had pretty good control over anger. People had to get pretty outrageous to cause, to resonate anger, to cause that to resonate in me. Except in one situation, that was behind the wheel of a car. And if somebody did something stupid, I could be in fist-shaking rage in seconds when that occurred. And it was an issue, this goes back earlier in my life, it was an issue that probably for 4 or 5 years I consciously, purposely worked on. And I would think, there, I've got that one handled. And then, you know, somebody cut me off and I'd be right. I mean, just in a fraction of a second, it would be right there. And I got into a situation where that came up again, and I can time frame it because my son was on, I was carrying him on my hip. He's now 33, so he was probably between 2 and 3 years of age. And I, when I resolved this, I was actually standing there with him on my hip. And, you know, one of the things that you need to do is to build the brain cells to be able to decode what it is that maybe you've been dissociated from for 1,000 generations. And so this was an issue I'd worked on for a long time, and just, you know, I just wasn't breaking through it. And finally, this one day, I get this intuitive insight. And to me, this is a skill you have to develop, and you develop as you do your work, that this was an inherited anger from my great-great-grandfather. Now, my great-great-grandfather was dead. I don't even have an idea how many years before I was born. But as that came forward, I literally spoke to my great-great-grandfather as though he were physically present, and I had a conversation. The conversation went like this. Gramps, I get the idea that this energy of rage is yours, and it's been running me for too long, and I'm ready to be finished with it. If you want it back, you're welcome to take it, or I'll let go of it for both of us, but I'm getting rid of it now. That was the last fist-shaking incident I've had in my life behind the wheel of a car. Now people do stupid things, and I'll bless them and say, I hope you make it home in one piece, rather than go into that rage. So my take on that would be, was I finally became aware enough and developed the skill to decode the part of my genetics that held that rage from great-great-grandfather, and then I was able to deal with it. And it's very much like, you know, an example that I use in that regard is a few years back I had a computer that I'd bought, a desktop computer, had problems with it, called in, spent hours on tech support, they couldn't fix it on the phone, send the computer in. So I send the computer in, and they supposedly fix it. Excuse my phone for whistling. They supposedly fix my computer, send it back, and the problem is absolutely identical. So I call them again, more time and tech support, send the computer back again. And they supposedly fix it. I get the computer returned, and it's exactly the same. Well, my son at this time was in computer school, and his teacher and his employer was a NASA computer scientist. And so I call Graham, and I say, gee, Graham, I've got this problem with my computer, and the manufacturer's had it twice, and they can't fix it. You got any ideas? He said, well, you know, read the error message to me. So I read the error message. He said, oh, okay, well, just do this. Open the CPM and go type this, type that, hit a return. Okay, it's fixed. And it was fixed. Now, Graham had spent decades building the brain cells to understand how to decode the messages that came forward. Most people in their lives spend most of their lives in denial and dissociation, avoiding decoding the messages that are in them. And then they say, gee, I wonder why I can't heal this. I wonder, you know, no, don't give me feedback. Don't tell me that I need to look at something. I already know what the problem is. And you know, I'm really not interested in what you have to say. It's all your fault anyway. And so the denial and dissociation keeps them from building the skill of being able to decode what's going on inside of them. That's the creation of their diseases and their pain and their turmoil. And so the willingness to be in the process of decoding, and it can take years. But of course, when you realize your whole life is run with it by it, what difference does it take how long it takes? It's like, what else is there to do?
Right. Thank you. So may I ask the second question?
Let's go for it. Yes, ma'am.
Great. Thank you. Thank you both, Michael and Jeannie. So I'm
You're
switching
welcome.
Over from the worksheets to the personal code. So,
yes.
You know, I understand working with universal laws and principles that whatever your issue is becomes the law of your life until it's neutralized. So I'd like for
right.
you to expand a little bit on your, just like you've done in terms of the worksheets, for somebody to, me in this case, maximize the potential, the output, the result from using a personal code that would have what you just mentioned, this ability to decode the situation and then have, of course, naturally a healing. And if you might look at or take the section that has love for others, love for self, and love for truth. And do you have an example from anybody's experience on how that particular decoding process occurred?
Sure. Good question. And let me just explain a little bit about what you're talking about and where you are for people who might be new to the show. Joanna is calling from our teaching center, Heartland in the Ozarks. Joanna's been there for a couple of weeks now. She's going to be there for several more weeks doing her work and supporting Heartland and getting ready for the intensive season. One of the things that we do in our intensives is we do what's called a personal code evaluation. The personal code evaluation is a set of questions that break down our personal code and where the holes, so to speak, in our mind are, where we have blockages, where we can't see what needs to be dealt with. Three of those areas are love for self, love for others, love for truth. And so those three loves out of the 10 areas that are broken down are really extremely urgent things to have in balance, because the mind will skew things. The mind will twist things in a way that makes it difficult to break through in an area where there isn't balance. For instance, if one has a really high love for truth and a low love for others and a low love for self, that's what we call the recipe for hell and hell to be with. In that one loves the truth, so it looks at something, it doesn't have much love for self or others, and so it will blow that situation way out of proportion, make it much bigger than what it really is. And so it's hell to be in your own body if that's your profile, because every little thing becomes a major burden on one's shoulders if one has that profile. And or we say hell to be with, because if that person will just badger and be on top of somebody who's over the smallest thing. It just, you know, it's called, you know, making a mountain out of a molehill. That's what that evaluation score says. Now, let's reverse that. Let's imagine that we've got somebody who has a low love of truth and a high love of self and others. That person is going to be gullible. That person blocks information because of the low love of truth. There's information that person could really use in order to understand what's going on, but they block it. They won't allow it into awareness about self or others. And or if there's a high love of truth and high love of self and low love of others, then it will be one that blames. It's always somebody else's fault. So there are several different profiles. Now, I don't have your evaluation numbers in front of me, but what if you look at it in terms of challenge, what are your numbers on the in the challenge section on the love of self, love of others, love of truth?
I don't have it in front of me either, but what I know is, let me see if I do know. I believe love of self and love of, you know what, tomorrow I will have that for you.
Okay.
And so I'd like you to elaborate on that. I know that two were the same. And one was different, and the love of truth, I think, may have been less than, but I want to be sure on that one.
So if love of truth was lower than love of self and others, then the tendency would be, you know, there's a situation happening around yourself that it would be good to know more information about yourself, but because of the low love of truth relative to love of self, your mind won't let that information in. And or the same with, you know, there'd be something going on with somebody and it would be really useful to have this additional information, but because love of truth is low, the mind won't let it in. And so the assignments in the evaluation, and when people come and do an intensive, again, for folks who are new to it, we do this personal code evaluation, and then we look at what are the three areas, sometimes four areas, where you have the biggest challenges, where you can do the most learning. And that's where we'll give assignments. We'll give mind shifters and we'll give specific assignments for each of those areas. And, you know, the evaluation scores go on a scale of 1 to 100. And we've seen people who come to Heartland literally with scores of 0. Let's say, for instance, in love of self, 0 or 10 or 15 or 20 out of 100. That person's really in deep trouble with themselves. And after a 9-day intensive, we'll see them leave and their score will be a 95. Because when you're given the tools to undo the blockages and work through it, you just undo the blockages and work through it. It becomes fairly simple. Not necessarily easy, but fairly simple.
Okay, Michael, Richard said he knows his numbers, so he would like to share.
Okay, cool.
Hello, Michael.
Hey, sir.
Yeah, I remember what mine are. David told me, he said, you've got a recipe for hell here. Because my love of truth was a 6. My love for others was a 3. And love for self was a 2.
Run that by me again. Love for truth is?
A 6.
Okay.
And love.
So that means you've got a high. That means you've got a high love of truth.
Yeah. And love for others is a 3.
And love for self is
a 2.
Okay. So what that says is you've got a high love for truth, a medium level of love for self, and a low level of love for others. But with that high, with the big differential from a 2 and a 3 to a 6, that's not just the recipe for hell for yourself, but it's a recipe for hell to be with. And has anybody ever said to you, Richard, you're making a mountain out of a molehill here. It's really not that important. You ever heard those words?
Oh, yeah.
So that's how your mind skews things. So the assignments there would be to bring up your number 2, your love for others, and your love for truth, when they get up in the range of your love for self, so let's say they were all at a 6, then all of a sudden your mind would be showing you data more accurately, and you wouldn't be blowing things out of proportion. There'd be a problem. You say, oh, gee, you know, we got a problem here to deal with, rather than, oh, my God, we better get dealing with this problem, you know, rather than making it something much bigger than what it really is. So that's what the assignments are for in the love of self, where the assignment is, if I find myself thinking or speaking something negative about myself, I stop, I cancel, I reset love, I think, speak, and write something I love about me. So the idea is you're changing the way that your mind shows you information as you actually do that. And the same in the assignment for love for others. And so if you find yourself thinking, speaking a thought that's less than love about another, you stop mid-sentence, you cancel that, and you think, speak, and write something you love about others. And of course, one of the assignments, if the love for self is a challenge, is to ask people to ask to tell you what they love about you. So, is that a question you'd be willing to ask?
Oh yeah, I've been doing that.
Cool. Fabulous. All right. So, does that make some sense of it?
Yeah. Yes, it does. It does.
Fabulous.
Okay,
Fabulous.
So Michael,
any other questions or thoughts? Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to say thank you for all this clarification. I'll be asking for more tomorrow, Monday. They told me not to ask you tomorrow, so Monday.
Yeah, tomorrow we'll be breathing people here in Lake Worth. But it's fabulous. We love your questions, and it'll be fun to watch how your questioning ability develops as time goes on with the tools and you deepen your understanding for yourself and for everybody else.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeannie.
Hey, okay, we appreciate you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, we've got, what area code, sweetie?
970.
Area code 970. You are on the air. Give us a name. Where are you calling from?
Hey, Michael and Jeannie. It's Carrie in Colorado.
Hey there, Carrie in Colorado. How do you be?
I'm great.
Well, good.
It's been a great radio show. I've been listening, and I really liked what you said at the very beginning about how every thought creates or activates a neuropeptide, and then those activate the thoughts of our generations. And I love hearing those stories of people getting, you know, I guess, I don't know if you call it, well, I wouldn't call it instantaneous healing. I would just call it shifting of the what's being represented in the physical, and maybe you call it healing, but and having been involved in body electronics, health in the human mind and body electronics years ago and for quite a number of years, as I believe you were too, I had the opportunity to see so many of those kind of healings or changes in the physical based on the changing of the focus of the mind, heart, and intention, and up to pure love, and including my own broken arm that doctors x-rayed and wanted to do surgery on and put two pins in, healing in a matter of 6 hours with body electronics. I've never had any issue with the arm ever since. And in teaching it, then seeing, you know, a man grow a digit back on his finger, in some of the classes that we were in, a woman lost 11 dress sizes in one point holding session. A woman could read a sign who was legally blind at one point. And I love having a grounding in knowing that that kind of change can take place. And I've seen it in many other areas as well, like a man eliminating a tumor out his chest wall. And that was with more physical health and faith. But I guess I just wanted to bring these things up just to confirm what the other folks were talking about, the lady whose eyes shifted. I think that's just awesome. And I'd like to see more of this kind of thing going on. It's one of the things that I'll be teaching and talking about in my new book. But I think the thing we learned with body electronics and health in the human mind was, for us, that was sort of an ABC process to get us to understand how to make these things happen in the energetic physical world. And we learned over time that we didn't need to do as much point holding as long as we were willing to do the shifting on the inside. So I just love the whole process that you're working with, and look forward to seeing more people grasping how greatly they can shift and how, in a way, almost easily, when we're really willing to go into the pain. And I think that's the, when the pain comes up or the pain we're not even aware of comes to our awareness and we're able to go into it and dissolve and melt that and bring in, you know, joy and pure love that's on the other side of it. The amazing shifts that can happen totally, you know, so many ways on a physical level. So
that's the whole idea. That's what we're here to do, for sure.
Yeah. And I love hearing those stories. So I just wanted to say yay to those people that are making those shifts. And we're all in the soup together here, because I know that even for myself, there's times when I'm, even with everything I know, I'm still searching for the focus to get it at the highest level. So
yeah, that's where, for me, I always come back to the worksheet. That's the most awesome tool that I've been able
to
find on the planet for taking you into that dissociated part and bringing it forward for healing.
Yep, and then it sounds like the still point breathing is really, really extremely useful as well.
It's amazing. If you go to the Aramaic language, where the Greeks tell us that Yeshua, in the Pentecostal experience, Yeshua breathed on them. In Aramaic, that's not what it says. It says he breathed them. He showed them how to use the breath properly. And if you go back to the Aramaic language, where the Greeks tell us that God sent out his spirit, it doesn't say God sent out his spirit. It says the Creator sent out his breath. It's our direct link. And it's the key to how to go into a super processor state, how to go into a superconductor state, to let go of all the things that have been resisted down through the generations and held on to. In the Aramaic language, the word Satan is the resistor, one who misleads. And, you know, when you confront somebody with truth and they live in blockage of truth, they go into resistance and their mind tells a whole story about how this, that their feeling has to be about somebody else. And so when you move out of the resistor, you move out with the breath, and it is an awesome tool.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Well,
all right, young lady. Well, delight to hear from you. We'll look forward to seeing you this summer, and we hold you in a blessing in the meantime.
Yep. Thanks so much. Have an awesome day.
Okay. Take care. Blessings. Bye-bye.
607.
Area code 607. You are on the air.
Yeah, it's Richard Zanithica.
Is this that young man, Richard?
Yeah, this young man, Richard.
Hey, sir.
So I happened to jump on. I was late getting on today, and I didn't get on until about 1:30 when you were talking about, I'm trying to remember call. Anyway, you were talking with a woman from Heartland and explaining the process, I believe, of healing. And I unfortunately didn't catch the whole of it, but it intrigued me because I wish I'd caught it earlier, because my situation is I'm retiring from work, and I've had this conflict with my supervisor for about a year and a half now. And one of the things that I've recognized is that I believe both of, this is my opinion, is that both of us have been traumatized, and we're both here blaming each other for, you know, what's going on inside of us. And, you know, I realize myself that this is just something that's going on for me is getting triggered and from trauma.
We're down to about 30 seconds, Richard.
Okay, well, anyway, I wish I had more time to talk, but I guess we don't.
Well, why don't you call in early on? Well, actually, Monday is going to be a show dedicated to food process, so we're going to be asking for food questions on Monday, but maybe Tuesday call in first thing, and we'll carry on the conversation from there. In the meantime, we'll invite everybody, bring a stranger to the show on Monday, bring your food questions. Ari's going to be on with us for the hour, and create the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com. Evolving continuously.